Welcome to the Big Unlock podcast, where we explore the people and technologies that are transforming healthcare. And today we are delighted to have Dr. Andrea Willis, Senior Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee. And looking forward to a very engaging conversation. Dr. Willis brings together clinician leadership, population health strategy, payer innovation, overseeing efforts across quality, utilization management, pharmacy, and health equity, all with a focus on improving outcomes while making care more affordable and accessible. And she's also been a national voice on maternal health and disparities and on how data and AI can be applied responsibly to support both members and clinicians. So today we'll, you know, look forward to a very engaging conversation with her. And with that, welcome to all our listeners. And thank you for being our guest today, Dr. Willis. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's get started. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi, and I'm the co-host of the Big Unlock podcast along with Rohit. He's on a train today, so he said he'll try to jump on, but depends on how stable the internet is. So Dr. Willis, we always love to start with an origin story as to how you got into healthcare, you know, what drove you to join the healthcare industry. How do you find yourself where you are today? Because our listeners really like hearing that. So if you would tell us a little bit about that, please.
Absolutely. So I grew up in Athens, Alabama. Mm-hmm. And when I was a little girl at my grandparents' house, I heard this horrific noise in the shed behind their house. And I ran out there and it was a mother cat just in immense pain. Mm-hmm. And so I ran into the kitchen. I got some dishwashing gloves. I got scissors. I just knew I had to help that cat. Now, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew I was going to help that cat. So I went out there. Fortunately for me and the cat, it only took massaging the belly a little bit, and she delivered her one little kitten. So that was my first delivery.
Wow.
And I knew from that moment on, I would be a doctor. So I stayed true to that, and lo and behold, that's what I became.
Wow, that's an amazing origin story. How old were you at that time? You said you were a little girl, but how old were you?
Probably around 7.
Wow, you had so much presence of mind. You actually performed a delivery when you were 7 years old. That's amazing.
That counted.
You weren't scared to see all the blood and, you know.
I wasn't. I mean, I just knew that the mother cat was in a lot of pain and I just wanted to alleviate the pain. And that was the priority in my head. Again, maybe it was from TV that I thought I needed the scissors, but I had on my gloves. I was ready. And hey, we had a successful outcome.
Wow. Amazing. I'm like, this is something I've never heard before. So thank you for sharing that with us. Yeah. So Dr. Willis, you know, as you know, everyone's talking about AI, you're seeing dozens of pilots across healthcare. So where do you think, you know, in your organization, where is AI right now? And we would really be interested in hearing, even when you see a successful pilot, what do you think are maybe three parameters that say that, okay, now we can move this to scale? Or do you think it gets, you know, stuck at the pilot level and stays there? So I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. I think that we're trying to implement AI where we see so many others trying to implement it as well. Mm-hmm. And specifically for my area of the company in care management, we're looking at how AI can compile all the information that we have on a member so that when a care manager is talking to a member, that the care manager is truly present in that moment and able to just listen to what the member has to say. And AI is also a tool that helps to compile that interaction and helps to prompt a next step. And mm-hmm. so I think that's important because, again, it allows that care manager to be in the moment. And I think that's what people want to feel. They want to be heard and they're scared a lot of times. So I applaud AI for being an augmentation there. So definitely we have some pilots in place for that already and looking at where we need to make tweaks before we scale it out broader. But that is something we're looking at. A lot of AI is being looked at across the industry and utilization management. And I have to say, I have to put this out there very clearly, never to deny. That is not the goal of AI in the utilization management side of the house, but it is to make sure that once again, we can bring all the information that we have in the system to bear so that we can get to approvals faster. That's what we all want to see. So those are practical applications, but we are even asking our employees to put all of their ideas in a hat, so that we can see where we can innovate other places. So those are the big outward facing things that we're looking at on the clinical side of the house. But at the same time, anything that we can do even internally to make us more efficient, we want to do that because we really, really want to be there to focus on what our mission is, and that is to serve people.
So the two main areas that you mentioned, you know, care management and utilization management, I think for the care management, you've hit the nail on the head. You're using the most powerful capabilities of the LLM, which are summarization and prompting to make sure that you have all the correct information. So you mentioned that as a successful use case, but we are also equally interested in hearing about the failures with all this that we've been hearing about the trust and keeping humans in the loop so that that trust factor is really there. Can you talk about like a failure with, you know, an AI project that you experienced where you kind of realized that the limitations of AI are still very much in place?
Well, I am definitely glad that we do everything in a test environment before we go live. And that's where, of course, you want to see the failures so you can make the tweaks before you do go live. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that I mentioned, we love that information is compiled on the member things that we have in the system, but putting some parameters about the information that we have in the system. Just because somebody had a diagnosis and was on maybe certain medications years ago may not be relevant to what they have going on now. So it is putting in the parameters to make sure that we're focusing on the information that is still relevant and that will serve that member at that point. So I think that's one of the big lessons that we've learned. We've had digital care management in place for a while and we've tweaked it over time. And one of the things that we wanted to make sure to do was while people do like to self-serve and we want them to self-serve, there needs to be guided self-service. And then we want to make sure that that AI tool behind digital care management can surface when people need more help than the help that they can get through self-service alone.
So, yeah, so that's basically, again, the augmentation part of it that you talked about, right? That AI should be a tool to augment and help the workflows wherever possible. And on the other point, Dr. Willis, where you're talking about utilization management and you said, you know, the goal is not to deny. I think that's like a really key point in like, because the provider trust has really been eroded and people are like doubting the intentions. So what kind of guardrails do you put in place to make sure that, you know, that utilization management, like that's the guiding philosophy behind your utilization management?
Well, we have, like many other health plans, signed commitments as it pertains to prior authorization, for example. And one of the things within that commitment is making sure that we give good documentation for a denial that tells exactly why something was denied so that people are not in the dark on that. That's something that we have always strived to do. But I do think that as an industry, we're trying to be even more intentional about it so that people know why. But more importantly, for going forward, the kind of information that's needed to make a good decision. At the end of the day, we really do want to work with providers to make sure that we're making the best decision for the member. And of course, we even want the member to be in partnership with the decision making. So I think by our showing, trying to be as transparent as possible to say, here is the why, then they know that it was a licensed clinician that was making that decision. And then they hear very clearly, but in plain language as well, the why.
So that really helps for them to kind of trust the system and, you know, make sure that the evaluation was done in good faith and understand the process.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, it's really about using evidence-based criteria to get to the best decision. And I think everybody wants that. So I think that maybe digital means will be one of the ways that we will get there. When interoperability goes into place, one of the things that it seeks to do is to make sure that information flows from payer to provider, from payer to payer, and from payer to member as well. So I think once we have some of those electronic flows of information in place, and we know it'll take time for it to do all the things that we hope that it'll do, I think a level of transparency will come there as well. So it's one of those things where our systems talk and people can see, oh, wow, this is where there was a gap. Sometimes there's always, we don't know what all is going on over there. Well, we don't have all the information from over here. But if we started having our systems to talk more, then I think that would also start to gain some trust among all the parties involved, and we can really work as a team.
Yeah. That's, I think, a very good insight, because right now we've had these big announcements from OpenAI Health and, you know, Claude Health. And that's exactly what they're trying to do, is kind of like put all those pieces together and do the interoperability bit of it and make sure that systems talk to each other so that the patient has a very seamless experience, and as well as the physician, like they're able to see the entire health history of the patient at one place because the systems are able to talk to each other.
Exactly.
Great. So whenever we talk about, you know, anybody who has done AI implementations, success metrics are always difficult because sometimes, you know, the success metrics are very nebulous. Like even with voice agents, when we talk to people and they say, do you have, you know, satisfaction numbers? Can you prove that, you know, the patients had a more satisfying experience when they were talking to voice agents? That's really hard because it's subjective. So do you have any examples of, you know, any success metrics or any examples of benefits that were realized by clients due to these AI projects that you can definitively say that AI did a good job and that's the way forward?
I think in care management, one of the good things to point to is when a person's goals are met. So if it's an acute need versus a chronic need, when those needs are met, we can close a case. So we do track those metrics, and we definitely are seeing that we're closing more gaps in care, we're meeting more needs. So we do track all of that. That's been extremely satisfying. We've been able to push out digitally messaging to members to say, care management is available to you if you have needs that we can help meet. And since we've done that, our care management engagement numbers have gone up tremendously. And then the downflow of that is we get to close more gaps in care. So that's been tremendous. And I think that just fosters in the excitement within the team because they get to see the difference that they're making. And it is not just subjective. We can really point to, we did this for somebody. We got this person home successfully with everything that they needed. We got them to that next appointment. All of those type things, those are the things that you want to see. And it definitely fuels and motivates the staff. And then that makes them want to be even more innovative. And then so they're trying to think of, maybe we can do this next. Maybe we can do that next. So even the ideas that are being generated to make the experience even better is a metric in my mind as well. But yeah, definitely making sure we achieve the goals of that member is probably the best metric we can look at.
So you said that digital communications have increased your care engagement because you can directly kind of close the loop and see that the people are more satisfied. What are some of the other gaps that you saw in the digital health experience, like some big gaps that are on your radar screen to work towards or to close? If you can talk a little bit more about the gaps.
I think, you know, there are definite real gaps. Again, making sure that, you know, we're speaking as a team across the payer to provider and with the member. So there's definitely a gap when there's interruption in the sharing of that information, which can occur a bit. I would say another perceived gap is the conservatism that goes on to scale some of the AI solutions within healthcare because of protected health information. So yes, it's not that things aren't occurring, mm-hmm, but there are so many checks and balances being put into place, mm-hmm, to make sure that we definitely continue to protect health information. So I think sometimes that's seen as a gap, but it, mm-hmm, is conservatism. But I think it is incumbent upon all of us to push through and not to say we got to stop here because this could happen, this could happen, to say, but here's what we know we want to happen and how do we solution to get there? And I do think we're finally there now where we're like, we got to tackle it. I mean, it's hard, but we're going to, yes, tackle it and we're going to get through it.
I think you hit the nail on the head, you know, like 2 years ago, everybody was in experimentation phase, but not anymore. Everyone knows that you have to scale and scale very rapidly to keep up with the dizzying pace almost of the AI innovation that's happening all around. But at the same time, that raises all these questions about, you know, bias and ethics and, you know, governance. So what is, you know, BCBS's approach to that? Do you have like a governance and ethics committee, or like, is it cross-functional? Are you bringing in people from different teams? Tell us a little bit more about that and your approach towards addressing all these different issues, bias, privacy, ethics, and governance questions related to
AI. There is a governance council, and it is cross-functional. People from every division within the company sit there and they have a voice, which is hugely important. Again, it's about protecting the privacy and the sensitivity of the health information. So we definitely have that. So, I mean, there are some things that we have learned from the industry in general. And then, I mean, we have to apply the rigor that we're known for within the state as well. So it's always about assessing the risk and the benefits. And I mean, we're going to heavily lean towards the benefits, but there's got to be a level of acceptable risk in all of this to make sure you keep pushing forward. But we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that we protect the privacy of those we serve.
Dr. Willis, this leads to the next question. You know, you lead such a huge team at BCBS. What is your approach in terms of, you know, AI literacy, and how do you address this growing gap? Because the pace of innovation is so quick that if you don't understand it, then it's hard to, you know, figure out how to use it. So as an organization, like, what is your approach to that, and how do you like set those programs in place?
So we've actually got a goal for the entire company this year to, mm-hmm, increase AI adoption. And, mm-hmm, it is really, there's a lot of latitude within the goal, but it is to produce the, mm-hmm, different AI pilots that you're going to pursue, okay, and what you're planning to scale based, mm-hmm, on the things that you implement. And so for me personally, I've been trying to use it every day and trying to learn more about it, not only in my professional life, but in my personal life as well. And, okay, because we have a company goal of AI adoption, I've also given my leadership team an, mm-hmm, AI goal, and it has to be a SMART goal. So we have to have those in place by the end of this month. So, mm-hmm, I'll work with my team to make sure the goal is a SMART goal and not just a goal to say, well, I'm going to use AI. No. How are you going to use AI, mm-hmm, to have a more productive team? How are you going to create more efficiency for the team? But most importantly, how are you going to use it to help those that we serve? So my team, everyone has a goal. And so we're definitely going to enforce that. And I love that the whole company has a goal, because that makes us all pull in the same direction. And so for my all employee meeting, even in December, we had some of our best users of AI give examples of how they used it and, mm-hmm, how they were able to create efficiencies. And now we have a repository of best practices. So we're sharing those. So we are committed to getting better in this space.
Great. That's, I think, a really good approach, because what we've heard from other teams as well is that it has to be cross-functional. It can't be a top-down directive. Everybody has to be involved. So sounds like, you know, you're doing all the right things. And just wanted to mention one more thing that, you know, in all the classes that I took at MIT and Harvard, where we talked about, you know, generative AI in the enterprise, I think one thing they pointed out was that a lot of time people focus on efficiencies, but the real power of AI comes from actually looking at things in a new way. So sometimes it's not just about efficiencies, but just because you couldn't do things, you know, so it's not about the 5-10% efficiencies, but sometimes it can just unlock like a completely different way to do things. And that's where you really see the transformational change. So I think that would be very interesting.
I agree. I totally agree. Even in my own use of it, where I felt like, well, I'm just going to see if it comes up with the same answer that I came up with. It actually comes up with something where I say, oh, I didn't think about that. So I feel like it makes me better. I mean, I'll continue to refine it and ask it more questions, better questions, hopefully over time. But it does push me and it does make me step back and say, I wouldn't have thought at that point.
Yeah, great. So like I said, Dr. Willis, you know, time just flies by. So we're just almost at the end of the podcast already. Would love to hear any closing thoughts from you on, you know, where you think maybe in the next year or maybe like a 2-year horizon, where do you think AI is headed? And, you know, what do you see coming down the pipeline? And what are you most excited about?
I think that people do want to be able to do self-service. But like I said, I think AI gives us the opportunity to do guided self-service. I talk about all the time what we've seen in other industries. I don't ever recall wanting to do mobile banking ever. I didn't have trust for it. I mean, but all of a sudden they did it in such a way that they gently brought me in. Mm-hmm. And now I don't want to do anything but mobile banking. They just made it that easy, that friendly, and they really focused on my needs. And so I feel like there are lessons that can be learned from early adopters, even in other industries. What did they do right? And I think this is our time to seize upon that and to do it right for us. I mean, healthcare is so complicated. We all know that. So this is our moment to make sure that we increase the transparency. And I think that alone will bring better satisfaction with the healthcare system. So I'm excited about it. This is a great opportunity for us to be learners. We always want to be lifetime learners. And now I think we're compelled to be.
I think those are, you know, really good thoughts. I totally agree with you about the banking, how seamless it's become and how trustworthy it's become. And yes, you're aware of scams and you know things can go wrong, but, you know, broadly, it's a very seamless experience. So you're right. This is a momentous opportunity for healthcare to kind of redefine, you know, how people engage and bring back the trust and kind of make it as seamless as, you know, using your phone for other things. So it's been a great conversation. Thank you so much for participating, Dr. Willis. And thank you for being on our podcast.
Thank you so much.